Here's what you need to know about today. Why are Iranian missiles so effective? I mean, really, what gives? Why are they hitting so many of their targets and seemingly easily? I'm going to show you this. Prime Minister Netanyahu has moved his plane to Berlin, like their Air Force One, but of, you know, Israel. What does that tell you? And is Turkey going to be the next Iran? There's a very specific reason why I'm asking you this question. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, they say a picture is worth, what, 1,000 words? In this case, it may be even more. So I'm going to show you what the U.S. missile defense systems, like the Patriot and the THAAD system that you've heard so much about, we've showed them to you with the map. They're supposed to be the best in the world, right? They're supposed to be able to knock anything out. Any ballistic missile that goes up, they should be able to take it down. But that doesn't seem to be happening. And I've got one specific example I want to show you of how it's not happening. Watch this. Okay, there is the anti-ballistic missile defense system going to head off this ballistic missile from Iran. Now watch what the ballistic missile from Iran does. It goes around it and then goes ahead and hits its target. Now, this could be a Fatah or a Qassam. I'm not sure, but it definitely is avoiding the U.S. anti-defense missile system. And we've heard all about this, but to actually see it happen is kind of fascinating, isn't it? Simply goes around, or at least it appears to be going around. I'm not an expert on this. And then the reporting that I'm reading about this is that's because the Iranians are using some very specific satellite systems working alongside their missiles, which make both more precise, more maneuverable. And where did they get that equipment, those satellites? China. And apparently this is the first time that we've seen this stuff being used. I mean, here, look at it again. Look at it again. It goes around and then boom. It's amazing to watch, but this is becoming a very important part of the story, right? And so what happens? More and more of these buildings that thought, these people in the Gulf countries, they thought, we're protected. We're being protected by the United States of America with the best anti-ballistic missile defense system in the world. Well, apparently it's not working. And we've got example after example of incidents where you can actually see diplomatic installations, embassies being bombed. Here, look at this one. This is in Dubai. That's crazy, isn't it? I mean, we've seen the same thing in Abu Dhabi. We've seen the same thing in Kuwait. We're seeing embassies. We're seeing diplomatic missions. We're seeing different buildings associated with these governments that are being taken out. And now there's this. You see that right there? That's the Saudi embassy. Now, we told you about this yesterday, but we hadn't seen this picture, right? It's huge. This is the video of the Saudi embassy from afar. It's a huge, huge fire that develops, and it's almost like a whole city block. And again, U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia. It gets pounded hard, and huge fire. Entire city block. This is in Riyadh, obviously. And again, this is a place that's supposed to be protected by the U.S. anti-missile defense system. So what gives? Now, let me ask you another question. This is important. Because it's kind of one of those giveaways, right? How do you know when somebody thinks that they're vulnerable? Maybe that even they could be losing, right? Here's a clue. When they have to hide their plane, it's called the Wings of Zion. Look at this picture. This is like the Air Force One of Israel. They call it the Wings of Zion. They call it a flying fortress. It's essentially a 767, heavily modified with anti-ballistic missiles. What's it doing in Berlin? What is it doing in Berlin? Ask yourself, why did they have to move it out? Don't they trust that they could protect it? Apparently not. It's a really important question that makes us wonder what's happening. Why did they make that decision? You know what? There's a lot of people now who I think, and you've seen them here on this show because we've had them on before. Scott Ritter, for example. Say what you want about Scott Ritter. I happen to think he's one of the smartest people in the world. And also, he's the guy who rang the bell and told everybody about the situation in Iraq. He said, do not go to war in Iraq. It's going to be a disaster. And no, they don't have WMDs. He said that. Put his reputation on the line and paid for it dearly, this guy. And now he's been saying the same thing before the attack on Iran. And now that the war is actually taking place, and this guy knows military hardware as well as anybody, he's out there describing what he is seeing, and it's not a pretty picture for his country. And this guy's an ex-Marine. Take a listen.
Don't have access to the Iranian battle plan. But what we can see suggests exactly that, what you have said, that the Iranians are doing extraordinarily well. So if we evaluate Iran on the totality of the missiles launched, we would say they have about a 33% success rate. If we evaluate them on the missiles that need to hit the targets Iran wants them to hit, the success rate is close to 100%. And these targets are devastating in terms of what they're hitting. They're destroying American radar systems worth hundreds of millions of dollars, in one case, $1.1 billion. By the time they're finished with the United States, the price tag on infrastructure lost will be over $100 billion, $100 billion of American infrastructure that will be destroyed in the Middle East.
Americans pay taxes and they're watching it blow up. They're watching it disappear with all of this that we see going on. He's not the only one. I mean, I've been checking. Doug McGregor, Colonel Doug McGregor, one of the most respected military minds in the entire world. I remember talking to Colonel Doug McGregor before Mr. Trump was elected. And on the phone, he would tell me what he was planning to do. He was telling me about his conversations with the president. Not that he was too specific, nor am I going to tell you what he was talking about. But there was a sense that Mr. Trump was going to have people like him leading the military for the United States. Doug McGregor would have been a great Secretary of Defense, or Secretary of War, whatever you want to call it. He would have been amazing. He would have been so good. He's so qualified, so much more qualified than some of the people who are there now. He was talking to Galloway yesterday, right? George Galloway. Listen to what he says about the war.
China and Russia are sitting on the sidelines monitoring everything. They're in close touch with the government. They're providing satellite intelligence, which accounts for some of the tremendous successes, particularly in Israel and on our U.S. bases. All of our bases have been destroyed. Our harbor installations are destroyed. We're actually having to fall back on India and Indian ports, which are less than ideal. That's what the Navy says. And I think Iran, much to our disappointment, is faring very, very well.
That's crazy. By the way, that's Matt Gaetz, not George Galloway. George Galloway was doing the interview with Scott Ritter. Matt Gaetz, who I was also texting with 2 days ago, because I think he's a former congressman, smart guy as well, and he's one of the few people in the American media who's actually asking the questions. And to be honest with you, one of the few people in the American media who has the intestinal fortitude to interview Doug McGregor. CNN won't talk to Doug McGregor because they don't want to hear his truth. Neither will the New York Times. Neither will Fox News. Neither will NBC. What does that tell you? Who's controlling the message, right? Now let's hear from somebody else. This is a U.S. senator now, Senator Blumenthal. He apparently had a briefing with the president and the president's team, and he came away seemingly shocked from what he heard. Because here's the question. Okay, missile defense system's not working. Iran's missiles are getting through. It's looking like, if nothing else, it's a draw right now. Iran's performing much better than most people expected they would perform. This situation's going to be going on for much longer than we thought it was going to go on. So what's next? Here's Blumenthal.
I am more fearful than ever after this briefing that we may be putting boots on the ground and that troops from the United States may be necessary to accomplish objectives that the administration seems to have, but I also am no more clear on what the priorities are going to be of the administration.
Boots on the ground. Ground forces, right? is what that means. I know it sounds pretty to say, oh, cool, boots on the ground. No, it's not cool. It's dangerous. And a lot of people will die, right? And a lot of people will die, including American troops and Iranian troops and civilians. Look at the numbers of civilians in past wars, like the one in Iraq. What was the number? Close to 500,000 civilians? How many could die here? And what are the consequences going to be? By the way, speaking of boots on the ground or whatever the hell they want to call that, there's something taking place right now in Lebanon that makes us think that that might be the case. We've got some. Let me look at this video. Look at this video. We have video coming in now of these are Israeli troops, right? Looks like what? Bradley fighting vehicles or some kind of modified tanks? Heading into what appears to be that area around Lebanon, because it appears that the Israelis might be sending troops into Lebanon to get into ground combat. This is crazy. RT correspondent Steve Sweeney happens to be standing by for us right now in Lebanon, where there continue to be indications about this. Steve, start this off by telling us what you're hearing about the possibility that we might see ground combat between the Israelis and the Lebanese in this particular area. And tell our viewers, if you could, where you are. Set the scene for us.
Well, right now I'm standing in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. So you can probably see just behind me is the airport and the Dahiya district. This is the district that really bore the brunt of the 66-day war. It's been at the front line now of the latest wave of Israeli aggressions. You might be able to see some of the smoke billowing from one of the bombings that took place. We think this one was actually from yesterday, but there's been bombings again over the course of the day, targeting news channels, radio station, civilian buildings. Not too far away from where we are now, there was a hotel that was struck. This is outside of the normal target zone. This was in a predominantly Christian area. So these areas aren't often targeted, but these are hotels that are... this is where displaced people go. This is where the people that have been displaced from southern Lebanon, they end up in hotels, in municipal buildings, in schools. A lot of places open their doors for people are, to give them shelter. But they're now stretched. They're very overcrowded. More than 60,000 people, we understand, have been evacuated from the south. Now, on Tuesday afternoon, that was we started hearing of more military hardware making its way to those border areas. We started seeing troop movements, Merkava tanks, diggers.
But let me just ask you, Steve, because I think what we want to know is, does it seem imminent now? I mean, are you getting a sense that they really are going to cross over and we are going to...
Well, it's happening now.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Fighting. Not crossing, fighting.
Yeah, yeah, it's happening. It's happening now. This is fight. No. Fighting is happening now. They're in the border villages, Merkava and Hula. There have been clashes. I think 30 strikes by the Israelis into those border villages. They're largely destroyed anyway. But as people are leaving, this is where we're seeing now the ground battle starting to take place. And you'll remember back in 2024 when the Israelis tried a ground invasion, then they got, for want of a better phrase, their asses handed to them on a plate. And it looks very much like that's going to happen now. The Israelis can't fight a ground war. This is why everything with Israel comes from the air or from the sea in some cases. But it's mainly this aerial bombardment, these missiles fired into Lebanon. They can't carry out a ground operation.
Can I just ask you a quick question? I know I wanted to ask you because you just said something a little while ago that made me think. You said that Israel was bombing Christian areas. I heard you say that.
Yeah, one Christian area.
What does that tell
us? This was in the early hours of Wednesday morning. They bombed... Well, I think what we can take from that is that this is part of a psychological operation. And this happened again in 2024 when people were displaced. And we're talking about the Shia community. When they started to be displaced and they were taking refuge in some in Christian areas, the Christian areas of Beirut, the Israelis were then... firing missiles and destroying either residential buildings or other accommodation that the displaced people were staying in. And it was to send a very, very clear message. We can find you, we will hunt you down wherever you are. But it was also sending that message, don't harbour these people. So they're trying to break that unity and break that solidarity between the various communities that are here.
Yeah, but it's just funny that they would hit an area like that, given that Americans are always told that the Israelis are simply just going after those big bad Islamist people, you know. And they would never be fighting against Christians, after all. But we keep seeing cases where people keep reporting that that kind of thing is taking place, not only here, but in Gaza as well, which is why it sparked my interest when you said that. Steve Sweeney, great job reporting. By the way, there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk about Israel's ambitions these days, some of what had to do with my conversation with Steve a little while ago. It wanted the United States to attack Iraq. The United States attacked Iraq. It wanted the United States to attack Syria. The United States attacked Syria. It gets what it wants, right? Wants the United States now to hit Iran. The United States hits Iran because it wants to sow chaos, including in the Gulf states now, right? Separate these countries into pieces. Don't let them be controlled. Don't let them be sovereign. Don't let them be neutral. Don't let them be allowed to be outside of the sphere of influence of the United States and of Israel. That's obviously the plan, right? So now the question is, what other country out there fits that description? What other country out there fits the description that I just gave, where they want to be sovereign, they want to have the right to criticize Israel, and do, and they don't want to be a part of any specific hegemony? All right? Listen to what the former prime minister of Israel said even before this war started about this country.
Turkish threat is emerging. I want to be very clear. Turkey and Qatar have gained influence in Syria, are seeking influence elsewhere and everywhere throughout the region. And from here, I warn, Turkey is the new Iran.
By the way, think about that for a moment. Turkey is the new Iran. Next target. This target has been explained many ways. Iran and why the United States attacked Iran has now been explained in many ways. Mr. Trump said at the outset that it had to do with Iran's past and how they've, I guess, misbehaved and done bad things. Then he talked about the missiles. Then he talked about uranium enrichment. He has literally had four or five different descriptions for why he was forced to do this, right? Not to mention Israel's needs. But now the president is talking about a brand new reason. He says now, I guess in hindsight, that the reason he attacked Iran was because he felt like Iran was going to attack.
Israel forced your hand to launch these strikes against Iran. Did that help pull the United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack if we didn't do it.
Wow. Lunatics. Because this war has spread so quickly, because citizens in adjacent countries, Lebanon, like you just saw, I mean, ground war is what Steve was describing there. And because some of these citizens in these countries are justifiably angry, right? And because some of these people in these countries expected protection from the United States that they're now not getting, we have decided to try and get a clearer picture from a lot of these places as we continue following this story. Joining us now from Islamabad, Pakistan, is Mushahid Hussain Syed. He's a former minister of information and a senator as well, has been here talking to me in the past, and I'm so happy to be able to invite him to come back on to give us a clearer picture of what's going on in Pakistan. Also joining us now from Doha, Qatar, is Dr. Ali Al-Hail, who is a professor of mass communications. Yes, just like me at Qatar University. It's a pleasure to have both of you men on. And unfortunately, under some pretty horrible circumstances. Senator Syed, let me start with you because of what happened in your country in the last couple of days. In fact, we've got some videos that I want to share with our audience. This is at the U.S. Embassy when protesters showed up angry. These are Shia protesters, obviously, and they're angry about what's going on. To them, the religious leader in Iran was important, if not blessed, and they decided to take their anger out on the U.S. Embassy, and it did not go well for them. We understand the death toll is somewhere between 20 and 30 now. It got very ugly in many places in your country. And listen to what some of the people say happened when they went there to, quote, peacefully protest.
The security personnel of the American consulate opened fire and martyred our unarmed protesters. We demand that the government of Pakistan immediately expel the American ambassador from Pakistan and permanently shut down the U.S. embassy and all consulate generals in Pakistan.
We were there for a peaceful protest, and suddenly the police, U.S. soldiers, and other security personnel opened indiscriminate and direct fire and used tear gas on us. So we were stuck between the police and consulate guards. We had no option but to go towards the consulate, and then there was direct fire from the U.S. Marines. Our guys received serious wounds. We wanted to help get them out, but we weren't allowed to do so because the firing wouldn't stop, which is the reason why more people were killed.
I can't tell you what kind of devastating grief has befallen us. All of these martyrs who were killed were very beloved, innocent flowers. Every one of them was a student. Look at their ages, 22, 20, 18, 17, just children. They had only gone to protest in support of Iran.
It's tough to see these pictures. Obviously, this is an outflow of what's going on in Iran. Senator Syed, describe what's happening in your country, and is the situation under control, or do you expect that we will see more of this?
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez, and greetings from Islamabad, and greetings to our brotherly country from Qatar in Doha also. Yes, there has been a very strong reaction in Pakistan, as there has been in other countries, including Muslim and non-Muslim countries, at the martyrdom and assassination of the supreme leader of Iran, which was a blatant act of aggression and bordering on what we would call gangsterism, because assassinating a foreign leader is a crime under international law. And there was definitely a reaction because Ayatollah Khamenei was a very respected Muslim leader who had stood up for the rights of the oppressed people, whether in Palestine or in Kashmir. And he had been a strong friend of Pakistan, Iran being a brotherly neighbor with 900 kilometers of border. So there was understandably among the people of Pakistan, above any denominations, there was this profound sense of sadness and grief at this event. And also especially because his family, his wife, his daughter-in-law and grandchild was also martyred with him. Right now, the situation is under control. There is apparently an investigation underway as to the causes of this unrest. This unrest was in Karachi, whose photo videos you showed. It was also in the federal capital, Islamabad, and also in some other parts of Pakistan.
There's so much going on here. I want to bring Dr. Ali in now to ask about this ongoing story that's really developing here for your country in particular. You expected that the United States would protect you. You expected that the United States would not use your territory for attacks in any way on Iran. You expected, in fact, that the U.S. air missile defense systems would be effective enough. None of that is taking place. What is your thinking now, as your country seems, and not just your country, but many of the countries in the Persian Gulf area, seem much more vulnerable than we ever thought they would be?
Thank you very much. Good evening to you both. Well, the United States supports only Israel. This ongoing war between Iran and Israel on one hand, and Israel and the United States on the other hand. It's not the war of the USA taxpayers. It is not the war of the United States of America. Hmm. It is the war of Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu is trying not just to change the regime in Iran. If he cannot do that, I don't think he can do that, but he is trying with the United States of America to weaken Iran. Why to weaken Iran? Because he wants to pave the way to control the Arabic land between Nile and Euphrates. That's what he announced many, many times. And this is very well known. And we heard that from the USA ambassador at Tel Aviv, Huckabee, when he mentioned about the Torah and the Prophet Abraham and the Prophet Moses. And he lied about all these holy prophets of Allah, of the Almighty God. And during those days of Torah and of Moses and Abraham, there was nothing, the term of the Middle East was not there. The Middle East is quite a contemporary term.
So what happens now? I mean, I get that, and I understand your anger with Israel, and I understand your anger with Ambassador Huckabee and the United States, and certainly with Bibi Netanyahu, who's now hiding his plane in Berlin, which I thought was interesting. But my question to you is, does this change Qatar's position geopolitically? Because Qatar has always been an ally of the United States, which is an ally of Israel, so I would imagine then you're against Iran. Are you now more apt, or is your government now more apt to side with Iran as a result of them being attacked?
Well, Qatar and the rest of the GCC countries, Gulf Council Cooperation countries, they have been holding a strategic relationships with the United States of America over the past 80 years.
Yeah.
Now the Gulf states feel, not just Qatar, the Gulf states feel that the United States betrayed them. They are not defending them against the Iranian missiles, but the United States, from their perspective, only defending Israel and supporting Israel, despite the fact that this war is not America's war. This war is rather Benjamin Netanyahu's war. Hmm. He wants to, he's trying, attempting to drag the Gulf states into a war against Iran. And he, as you showed in your report, also trying to drag Turkey into this conflict. This is not the Gulf states war. This is not the Turkey's war. This is only and solely Benjamin Netanyahu's war.
Yes. By the way, just one quick question before I get back to the senator. The anti-missile defense systems that don't seem to be working as well in your country, as some say they're working in parts of Israel, what do you make of that? What do you make of the fact that these anti-ballistic missile systems aren't working? Do you think the United States is purposely allowing the missiles to get through? And I certainly do not want to put words in your mouth, but what do you think?
Well, since Sunday, the Qatari air defenses succeeded into intercepting the Iranian missiles even before they entered the Qatari space. That's what I know personally. Most of the missiles couldn't succeed to enter the Qatari space. Now, Iran started firing these missiles, as it said, against the U.S. Military bases in Qatar and in the rest of the Gulf states. However, the American, the USA military bases, not just only in Gulf states. I mean, for example, why didn't Iran attack Turkey or Armenia or Azerbaijan? They also have military bases. This is a big question.
Yeah.
Everybody is asking it.
Senator, let me ask you a question about what's going on with Israel and India, interestingly enough. I keep seeing these pictures all over the internet of Mr. Modi and Mr. Netanyahu together, and I guess some communications they've had. How does that sit with you, and maybe more importantly, your government?
Is the
first
question
of all,
for
I
me?
Would like to...
No, for the for I'm sorry for Senator Syed.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to agree with Dr. Ali, my friend and brother from Qatar, regarding two things he said: that A, it is Netanyahu's war, and B, that the United States has betrayed its Arab friends and allies like Qatar, which they did also last September when Israel blatantly bombed Qatar, despite the United States having an agreement with Qatar and the U.S. base and so forth. Coming to your specific question, we see the emergence of an India-Israel axis between two ideological soulmates, Mr. Modi, who represents Hindutva, which is the Indian version of Zionism, and which is also representing the Indian version of Eretz Israel, Greater Israel. They call it Akhand Bharat, where they talk of Greater India. And these two ideological soulmates have a certain animus bordering on racism towards other communities, especially the Muslim people. Hmm. And I would like to remind you that in 2024, 8 Indians were arrested and convicted in Qatar for spying for Israel, and they were sentenced to death. So the coordination between India and Israel, and especially Mossad, is because Qatar is a very important country playing a very pivotal and positive role in the region for promoting peace and harmony and coexistence among different countries. They are targeting Qatar also. And I feel that this axis is a very dangerous axis. And the last visitor to Netanyahu in Israel was Mr. Modi, who went to give him a pat on the back. And if you see the Epstein files, and I've been reading the Epstein files very regularly.
Yeah, I read
it. I've written an article also on the geopolitics of the Epstein files. The Indian-Israel axis comes out very clearly, where Mr. Modi sent his special envoy, Mr. Ambani, who's a rich crony of Mr. Modi's, to Epstein, that before Modi goes to Israel and before he visits Trump, what should he be doing? And Modi was mentored by Epstein, and he said he was asked to sing and dance for the American president. And according to the Epstein files, it worked. So you can see this India-Israel axis is very much apparent, even in the Epstein files, you know.
In fact,
it's evident.
My friend Tucker Carlson was intimating and reporting, as have others, by the way, that what really is going to happen is that finally Israel will depart the United States. It's gotten all the juice it can from that fruit, and it's going to move toward an alignment with one of two countries, either India or China, and it's most likely going to be India. So stop being allied. What do you make of that?
I think this is plausible. Certainly not China. China is a different cup of tea, but India has an ideological approach, and they have a certain animus, you know, under Mr. Modi and his extremist regime based on bigotry, and so is Netanyahu. They are both fascist regimes, they are both racist regimes, and so they are ideological bedfellows and soulmates, as I said, ideologically. So they are a threat to the region, and both are very expansionist, and
to be fair,
becoming a civilizational conflict.
But to be fair to Mr. Modi and the Indian government, these things that we describe happened before the war. This war began with Iran, and we don't know of any specific communication since, unless you do.
I would like to tell you that India was also sending ammunition and arms to Israel during the Gaza genocide, and that was documented in 2024. and there were markings of Indian ammunition. And during the Indian aggression against Pakistan last year, Israel sent its Harop, H-A-R-O-P, the Harop drones for India, which were manned by Israeli technicians. Despite that, we gave them a bloody nose to the Indians and well as the Israeli backers. So I think that it's very clear. The facts are before us.
Dr. Al-Ali Hail, let me come back to you. There's two arguments that people make when they describe you, not just your country, but all the countries in the Persian Gulf. And that is that in many ways, they're vassals of the United States, economic vassals. What would you say to that charge?
Well, the relationship between Gulf states and the United States of America is quite a long-term relationship. This relationship covers everything, political, economic, and, to cut a long story short, strategic dimensions of this relationship.
Does the relationship require you to be enemies with Iran? Do you feel like you're the enemy of Iran? What would you, could you pick up the phone, or could somebody in your government pick up the phone and have a conversation, for example, with President Pereshkian?
With the President Pereshkian?
Yes.
No. The Foreign Secretary Abbas Iraqi has been phoning the Gulf states and assuring them that the Iranian missiles are not directing, are not targeting the Gulf states' interests. They are only targeting the USA military bases.
Do you believe them? Also, Do you believe them when they say that?
Well, I don't know. It is not a question of believe them or not, but he phoned the rulers, of the six Gulf states.
Yeah.
And I don't know what was the reaction.
But what are the facts on the ground? I mean, it's pretty simple. Are they only hitting U.S. installations, or are they also hitting civilians or other government buildings? I mean, it's a simple question to determine, no?
The Iranian missiles did hit the civil infrastructural projects, no question about that, and that is quite a flaw. However, we, the Gulf States Council, when they convened, they said they don't want to be dragged into a war. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu wants. He desperately wants to get the Gulf states dragged into a war against Iran. The Gulf states are quite concerned. They are interested in the political stability, economic stability, investment stability. They are the safe haven of the world. They don't want to be dragged into a war, which is not their war. It is Benjamin Netanyahu's war only.
Yeah. Senator Syed, let me ask you.
If I may mention this point, this war, Donald Trump in particular has a great interest in this war to divert the American opinions from the Epstein files, because he is, have a lot to do with Epstein files and the problems in Minnesota, Minneapolis, with the ICE and the federal police against the people there, and other issues within America, because many Americans now, they have a consensus against the against Donald Trump, because the American people feel that their standard of living fell down because of Israel and Ukraine in particular.
Yes, yes. No, you're absolutely right. In fact, the latest polls that are coming out right now seem to indicate that Americans who were pretty much between 75 and 80% against any kind of war with Iran maintain that they're still against the war with Iran and are questioning why it is that Mr. Trump did this in the first place. But Mr. Trump, and I'd love to get you guys to weigh in on this, Mr. Trump has just said now that his reason for this war with Iran is different than the reason he gave us before. Originally, it was the nuclear, but now he, hold on, now he's saying, and I would play that, except I don't know if we have enough time, he's saying now that he went to war with Iran because Iran was about to attack. That's the new reason. And by the way, there's the poll that shows Americans are still against this.
Go ahead. America? I mean, Iran lies 7,000 miles away from the United States of America. I don't think this is a big lie. Iran is a threat to the security of the United States of America. No, Donald Trump was dragged into this war because of the pressures of the AIPAC and the Israeli lobby in the United States of America. These lobbies have been putting their heavy weight behind the fascist government led by Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel.
Senator Syed, do you agree? You know? Senator Syed, do you agree with that? Do you agree?
I would 100% agree with the assessment of Dr. Ali on this count. And I will take it forward also that basically Netanyahu, this gangster in the Middle East, he trapped Trump and blackmailed Trump with the Epstein files and forced him into this war, dragged him into this war, which is a war of Netanyahu, which is not America's war. And Trump has betrayed his mandate to the American people and to the mega base, because now it's no longer America first, it's Israel first. And he said no more wars. He's now jumped into this wars when there was no threat at all. And I think it's very clear that the American people are not behind him in this war, which is an unwinnable war, which is going to have worse consequences than even the Iraq missile adventure of 2003. And I think I would fully agree that the AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the Jewish lobby in the United States, that's, as you know, it was once said that the Israeli-occupied territory is not Gaza and West Bank alone. It's also the United States Congress and the Washington establishment. Sadly, that is turning out to be true.
I was doing an interview yesterday with a prosecutor from Texas who's pro-Trump and believes in this war and thinks that Iran should have been hit by Mr. Trump. But in the middle of the conversation, we started talking about some of the things that have happened since. And I showed him and told him about the pictures of 130 little girls in a school who died. It's horrific. It's terrible. I mean, And I asked him, well, I happen to be a Catholic. If somebody killed the Pope, it would bother me. I would be angry about that, because I just have, my parents taught me and I grew up as a Catholic and I believe in Jesus Christ. So this idea that the Americans would kill the supreme leader, who's a Shia important religious leader, not just in Iran, but all over the world, kill his family, kill two of his grandchildren, and then, as we see in these pictures, kill all of these little girls who are going to be buried in these grave sites and in this funeral that you're watching now. The question that I want to ask you about your particular governments is, how do you control the people in your countries from being angry enough to having a more violent outflow of this war? And I'll start with you, Senator, and your country in particular, because it's where we've seen the most resentment, really. What do you say to these people? What do you say? No, don't go fight. No, don't be angry. No, resist that urge for vengeance. How do you do that?
You know, there has been a wave of popular outrage and anger and deep resentment, and in fact, also sadness and sorrow at what has been happening in Iran. When on Saturday morning we learned about this joint American-Israeli aggression, because you know these are correct. They start by killing the kids. They killed 160 school children, similar to what Netanyahu did in Gaza, killing children in hospitals and schools. And this is what happened. That's why there was a massive popular reaction in the streets of Pakistan. You know, about 20, 30 people have been killed and 120 injured. Yeah. And so there was, and I've seen that this expression of outrage is in other countries also, apparently in Indonesia, India, and Bangladesh.
Does that make it less apt for this to be a short focused war, does that make it more apt for this thing to spiral?
Yes. Actually, the war is already spread now. I remember the Supreme Leader, when he gave an interview, he was asked if there's an attack. He said, God forbid if there's an attack on Iran, it will be a regional war. And the war is now gone to Europe. I mean, Cyprus is part of the European Union. It's all over the Gulf region. It's all over everywhere. Trump and Netanyahu have destabilized energy supplies, economy, travel, tourism. The Strait of Hormuz is closed, where 20% of oil goes and 30% of LNG from Qatar goes out. Everything has turned topsy-turvy. And I think it's the war has boomeranged on Trump. And I think Trump is going to be a major political casualty of this war. It's the beginning of the decline of Trump from his own base, from the American people. There's a sense his own mega base, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene or Tucker Carlson or Steve Bannon and others, they are hopping mad. And rightly so, because it's all about Israel. So he's playing the poodle to Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is controlling the strings. And because the lobby is so powerful, and the only one American president who can control them, JFK, he tried to do that in the 60s. And you know what happened? He said, open up the Dimona reactor. He said, have APAC be registered as a foreign agent. And, you know, 6 months later, he was no more. So I think they're so scared of this lobby in Washington, D.C., the Jewish lobby, the APAC, the Israeli lobby, that they're just doing their bidding to the detriment of America's own interests in the Muslim world in the Middle East. This is not America's war or Trump's war. It is Netanyahu's grand design, because he's a corrupt criminal wanted by the International Criminal Court. He's wanted for corruption, and he's lost the support of his own people also. And he just wants to cling on to this war to stay on in office indefinitely. It's as simple as that.
Dr. Ali, let me give you the last word on this. I want to know what you think about how long this war will last, whether it's protracted, whether it can be focused. And I'm also interested in knowing what you and others in your government who are in leadership positions, you in academia, others in government, some in the economic sector, are doing to try and keep the people in your country who are obviously angry from perhaps resenting so much that they make the situation perhaps even more hot than it needs to be. Or do you want to encourage them to be angry?
Well, first of all, it's almost entirely difficult to predict when this war will end. You know, when wars start, it is difficult to say when they will end. The Iranians said the American administration, Trump and Netanyahu, decided to when to start the war, but they who will decide when to end the war. That's the first point. The second point, we in the Gulf states, we're not talking about just Qatar. The Gulf states, the population, the governments, the people, the governments are not happy with this war and with the escalation of this war, because it is, as I said at the beginning of the interview, it is not the Gulf states and the Gulf states people war. This is Benjamin Netanyahu's war. So we, as Gulf states and the people of the Gulf states, should not be dragged into this war. Benjamin Netanyahu is desperately attempting to drag the Gulf states into this war. It would be disastrous.
Let me just stop you there and ask you about something that's in the news. There are reports that they are trying to do just that, and that they're doing that with Mossad agents who are fomenting issues. There's even a report that Mr. Carlson mentioned that your country, as well as Saudi Arabia, have arrested Mossad agents. Is that true?
That's what I have heard from Tucker Carlson, in particular, in one of his videos, that Mossad agents were arrested by the Saudis and by the Qataris. They were trying to plant bombs, explosions in those two countries, then to make the Gulf states throw the blame on Iran. As a matter of fact, we have doubts about Aramco explosions, for example, bombing. There are theories that Israel who bombed the Aramco, not Iran missiles, not Iran's missiles. Also, the same thing what happened, you know, in Oman.
But you cannot confirm. But hold on. You cannot confirm that there have been Mossad arrests. You're just basing it on hearsay at this point. To be fair,
That's what I heard from Tucker Carlson's video.
Okay.
That the Saudis and the Qataris arrested Mossad agents.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're saying it wouldn't surprise you if Israel was trying to foment problems to get the Qataris or the Saudis to be more intensified in their war with Iran. That would not surprise you.
It wouldn't surprise me at all because that's the ultimate goal of Benjamin Netanyahu to drag Gulf states into a war with Iran. But there are wise leaders in the Gulf Council cooperation who are not going to be dragged into this war, which is not their war.
I'll tell you, it certainly seems to be spiraling. It certainly seems to be escalating. And at this point, it does not seem to be going in the direction that the United States wanted it to go. They wanted this to be quick and out, and it looks like they're not going to be out. They might be there for a while, and now there's even talk of ground troops, and heaven forbid if that happens, because then this thing will get truly ugly. We'll see what happens. You gentlemen have been so kind with your time. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective, for sharing your wisdom, and for sharing what is really the point of view of two countries that are very much suddenly embroiled in this situation, not because they wanted to be, but because they've kind of been dragged into this. So once again, my thanks to you, Senator. My thanks to you, Doctor, for joining us sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you. Thanks for hosting me.
Of course. Anytime. Well, now to your comments. Most of you want us to do, well, more map segments. You saw the map segment that we did recently where we explained visually what was actually happening, because there's now so many countries that are involved in this thing. And taking you through each and every country is something that we were able to do with my new friend Stas. So let's start with Deadlift. He says, thanks, Rick and Stas. It's so nice to hear some insights from sources outside of the United States, especially a Russian perspective. Big ups to Stas for being able to speak Mandarin. That was a joke. He does not speak Mandarin. I said he did, and he agreed with it, but it was an aside. Also, Salim Kanaz says, as a Sunni Muslim, I'm saddened and heartbroken for all the aggression towards Iranian, and we're proud of Khamenei. Now, that's interesting because, you know, Khamenei was Shia. You, sir, are Sunni, and you're making that comment. That's important. Mr. Firghal says, this is what a true news channel is. Events are detailed with clarity and precision, and analysis is based on facts, on specific elements, not on ideology or propaganda like the subsidized media, which are factually controlled by Israel, by the way. Thank you, Mr. Sanchez, he says. Bill Bob says, two Americans on this Russian government channel doing Putin propaganda. Well, see, there's always somebody who disagrees. He does not like what we're doing, but we thank him for his comment anyway and his criticism. Bring it on. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. F8, says, Rick, keep this content going, and you'll be the number one source for information for geopolitics. We're trying, sir. We're trying. Hank Chaneski says, absolute excellent coverage. Appreciate Stan's insights and perspective. A true professional. Just analysis. Respect, gentlemen. As usual, we appreciate all the comments that you are sharing with us. And we invite you to go on our different portals and share with us what you think. We are on YouTube, as you know. And you can find me there. We are blowing up there. We're about to hit 100,000 subscribers. Same as on X, where we're having tens of thousands of people. Spotify. And now, BitChute. Check out BitChute. There I am, Rick Sanchez TV. where we have conversations on what is considered by many to be the most pro-freedom video portal, because people there tend not to be canceled or suppressed as much as perhaps in other places. Well, thanks so much for being with us, and I will be looking for you again. And once again, as I always like to say, thank you for letting us, for letting this conversation be a part of your day, and for letting us into your homes. We'll look for you next time.